This one word stops more people from achieving their dreams and accomplishing what they set out to accomplish. And that's what we're going to be talking about on today's Speak and Get What You Want podcast with the great Ryan Dice. Ryan, how are you, my friend?
I'm even better now that you just called me the great. I'm fantastic.
Hey, Chad Kirby. Listen, Ryan, I'm not just blowing smoke here. I was on a podcast 2 days ago and I was asked the question, if there's anyone that you could share a stage with, who would it be that you haven't already? And I was like, and I was just stumped. I was like, I can't think of anybody. And then he goes, okay, let me ask you a different question. Who do you wish that you could one day be on stage with again? And I said, Ryan Dice.
Okay, I was going to say, because we've been on stage.
I know. I said, Ryan Dice. And he's like, really? And I said, let me tell you, Ryan Dice, they're one of the most disappointing things in my career has been meeting people that I really looked up to, you know, where you meet them in person and you're like, oh my goodness, I wish.
To never meet your heroes, right?
Yeah, so hard. And I said, but Ryan Dice is the total opposite. He is the most authentic, real, caring business leader I've ever met. And so when people say you have to be ruthless to be super successful, I always think, well, Ryan Dice isn't that way. And that's genuine. It's pretty incredible. You and I, years ago, we were on an elevator and you had been petitioned, or people had come to you and asked you to create this bigger product. And you told me, you said, you know what? I don't have the time and I just don't want to take people's money. And I thought that was a powerful lesson for me that you probably don't even remember, but I love what you're about. But Ryan, let's jump into that word that really stops people from being successful. And that word is execution. Mm-hmm. People love to dream. People love to create. People love to do all those things. But actually, that execution piece is what really stops people from getting there. Why do you think that's the case?
Yeah, I mean, and to that point, I was listening to a podcast that Naval Ravikant is on. If you don't know who Naval Ravikant is, he's a, you know, very successful entrepreneur, very successful angel investor, owns, you know, AngelList, and just, you know, multi-bozillionaire kind of guy. And he said just that. He said, you know, I can tell the difference between like a first-time founder and a second-time founder, because first-time founders, they always want to like hide all their secrets. They don't want to tell anybody what they're doing. He said, at the end of the day, it's not really about like your business model or whatever moat you think you have or whatever proprietary technology or IP you think you have. It does come down to execution. That is the differentiator. And the people that have done this before, they know that. And so they're happy to just talk about whatever the heck it is they're doing, because they know that really it's going to be execution that's going to win the day. And so this is not something, an opinion that is just, I think, shared by you and by us. I mean, this is shared at some of the highest levels of business. And I think the reason that it is because it's very easy to plan. It's very easy to fill up a whiteboard with ideas. It's very easy to get everybody in a conference room and talk about all the stuff that you're going to do. It's very easy to set New Year's resolutions, right? The talking about the stuff is fun and it's easy, but at the end of the day, it's kind of playing business. And it's when we do our strategic planning and stuff like that, which I'm not saying is bad. It's something that you should do. But funny enough, that's like the least businessy thing that we do. But it's so much fun, but it's not actually the execution. And it's in that moment when we're separated from the execution that we tend to decide that we can do more than we can, which is a big mistake. Or just the other end of the spectrum, people who don't plan at all, and it's impossible to execute proactively when the world is just happening to you. Mm-hmm. So I think it's those two extremes. People who don't plan and the world happens to them can't execute in that scenario. And people who overplan and they play business and they're more interested in having a pretty plan with, you know, pretty whiteboards and, you know, posters with eagles in flight and entrepreneurial arts and crafts than they are with actually getting stuff done.
Well, and Ryan, I don't know anyone who has helped more entrepreneurs than you have go become successful, and your company Scalable, scalable.co, you really walk people through exactly what they need to do to go be successful. Do you have any idea what percentage of those individuals actually go and execute on it, as opposed to those who just keep coming back to hear the strategy?
Well, I know for our clients, I mean, it is the vast majority because we track it. And so, you know, our clients are executing an 80%+. I mean, look, sometimes stuff happens, the world happens, and you're just kind of holding on for dear life, and kind of your plan is just don't die. But apart from that, yeah, look, if you build a simple plan and an executable plan, I'm not saying that execution is easy. It's always the hardest part, and it's the thing that we always need the most help with. But if you get the first part right, you got a much better shot of getting the next part right, the 80% of it, the actual execution.
And so how important is simplicity in that? Because in your book's amazing as it breaks it down for you, but how important is the simplicity piece?
It's everything for multiple reasons. Number one, you've got to keep it simple because it has to be transferable to the team. And so if it's so complicated that, you know, you can kind of grasp it and you can understand it, but it's something, frankly, you've been wrestling with for a while, and now you finally got there and you've made it make sense to you, that does not mean that it's transferable to the team. And leaders, we do this all the time. We're very good at getting in our little time machines, going out in the future, observing the world that we want to see, frankly, thinking about it and processing it for weeks, sometimes months. And then we will deliver this complex plan to our team and expect them to just grasp it in a moment. Well, that's not fair. That's not fair. So one, it's got to be transferable, but two, it's the simple plans that actually can stand up in the real world. Because this notion, I mean, it's the whole classic thing, like, how do you make God laugh? You know, tell him about your plan,
right?
You know, and what is it? Mike Tyson that said, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Exactly.
So yeah, it is the simple plans that survive getting punched in the face. Mm-hmm. And so you have to do it. But I'll tell you, I'd like to pretend I have a perfect track record of this. If you go back to Q2 of last year, we were struggling. We were on the struggle bus, and it was, you know, this was across multiple companies. I mean, we were just, it was rough. And so we did what everybody kind of, I think, defaults to in that state is we flailed and we said, well, we could try this and we could try this and we could try this. And we didn't really know what would work. And so we did the worst possible thing you can do, which is we tried to do everything. Mm. And that quarter we greenlit, it was something like 30 or 40 projects in a team. Well, that's normally our limit is like 5 or 7. And that quarter we were like 47. You know how many we got done? Like 2 or 3. Like, it was ridiculous because, again, we tried to do too much.
Well, and it's interesting you say that because I've actually got your book right here, Get Scalable. And I was thinking about what you were just talking about with you actually on page 83, you talk about what is a high output team. Right. And sometimes we're communicating in a way where it's super complex, like you just said. And then you say to yourself, oh, you must not have a high output team. Right. And so you're like, well, I got to fire everybody. And people say all the time, oh, these people I'm working with, they just don't get it. And I love that you said here this. You said, here's the good news. You probably already have a high output team in the making. And it's not that you don't have the right people. You just aren't giving them the ability to go and execute.
Yeah, you haven't set them up to win. And I've done this. I've seen this firsthand because I have seen my team execute effectively. And then I've seen that same team execute poorly. Am I really to believe that everybody overnight just got stupid and lazy? Or is the more likely thing that I did something dumb? I've just been at this game long enough to realize that every failure in business is a failure of leadership. And I want it to be that way because if it's my fault, it usually means I can fix it. But yeah, I mean, if all you ever do is point at your people being like, they don't work as hard as me. They don't care as much as me. Well, of course they don't. It's not their company. They're not hopefully paid as well as you. Now, if they are, that again is your fault, not theirs.
Right.
So it's just... This is not the right way to look at it. I mean, the way that I've always approached this is my goal in any business that we operate is not to build a team of A players and rock stars. My goal is to build a business that doesn't require them. That's what I want to do. Not that I don't want great people. I've just found if great people are required, if you need superhuman effort for a business to work, you got a systems problem. You got a business model problem. You don't have a people problem. I've also found that actual A players want to work for companies that don't need them because they know that those are the companies where they're going to be set up for success. They don't want to come in and save your freaking sinking ship. They just don't want to do that. They got options. They're not going to do that. And so that's the question I'm always asking is, how can we make this work with an imperfect team? Because then it's going to work. If we have imperfect people, we're also going to attract more perfect people.
Wow. Ryan, that is so powerful because I think that really flips what people normally would think, right? They think to themselves, if I can just get a complete team of A players, then our company will be successful. But you're saying, no, yeah, you can't look at it.
That's like saying to your sad, lonely, depressed friend, man, you just need to start dating tens. Right? Why don't you just go, what are you doing? Like, why aren't you just dating just smoking hot supermodels with, you know, witty personalities and, you know, amazing hearts and character? Why aren't you doing that? Wouldn't you be happier if you do that? Like, that's the same advice as if it's like, just hire A players. Mm. The problem is your sad, depressed, boring friend can't attract those kinds of people. And so giving them the advice to just date them isn't helpful. What do we have to do? We have to become the type of person that is attractive to the people we want to attract. It's on us first. As business leaders, it is on us to build the type of company that A players want to come and work for. It is not their job to fix it for us. That's our job.
I love that. I love that. But you did something a few minutes ago that I just want to make sure I point out. You said last year in quarter two, we were struggling. We had a lot, and that's a level of vulnerability that you as a founder show that attracts people to you, and people want to work with you, and that's why you're such a powerful mentor, because a lot of people don't ever want to show, especially founders, they don't want to ever show any crack in their armor, and they're just like, but you're saying, no, last quarter we struggled, or last year we had this quarter we were struggling, so we had to dive in and fix it. And I think one of the big mistakes founders especially make is they think to themselves, nobody else is struggling like I am right now.
Oh, I mean, I'm fortunate. I mean, I'm in a fortunate position where we get to work with hundreds of business owners very closely. Mm-hmm. And so I've got a front row seat to what's going on out there. And so I just knew that lots of people were struggling. And so for me, it's easy. I've been doing this long enough. I've had enough success. I'm not trying to impress anybody. I've also just kind of always been this way because I've found that if you just say the truth, you don't have to remember what you said. Mm. It's just easier.
Right.
Also, I've found that everybody already knows anyway. So internally, you think that like, oh, I want to protect my people. These aren't children, y'all. They're adults. They know what's going on. They're going to feel a lot better if you're like, hey, here's the reality of the situation and this is what we're going to do about it. So I think it's better for you. It's way better for your team. And you're going to plan and execute more effectively if you're honest with everyone. But yeah, last year sucked and we didn't respond to it well. Like we did all the things I tell people not to do in that season. Now, we realized our mistake in Q3, five. We greenlit five projects because that's our thing. 3-5-1. Three key metrics that we're trying to optimize, five, maybe as many as seven projects, key initiatives that we believe if we execute over that 90-day period, we'll optimize those three metrics and then kind of one overarching goal, theme, or rallying cry for the 90-day period. That's our process. We run them in 90-day sprints. And what do you know? That quarter, we greenlit five. We did all five. And we actually experienced, you know, significant growth, progress, and results. We completed more than twice as much. We're twice as productive by committing to, a third, a quarter to as many things. It's like 20% or a tenth. Yeah, I'm not a math guy, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. And I love that you just, it's a lot simpler than what we sometimes make it out to be. And you stopped and said, okay, let's go back. I actually wrote a book on this. And so let's go back and see what I wrote and we'll just do exactly what I wrote and look what happens.
And I want to make a point there about what you said. I think one of the most powerful things that you can do as a leader is to say, hey, everybody, I made a mistake. I screwed up. This one's on me. We think that we lose credibility with our people when we do that. You don't. You actually gain tremendous credibility. It's a trust builder. And so let's say you have somebody in your team who isn't performing up to whatever the standards are that you've set. If you go to them and say, look, you're not performing up to the standards. You're not doing what needs to be done. We got to get this right. What's going to happen? They're going to immediately get defensive.
Right.
They're going to immediately want to defend themselves. And now you're in an adversarial situation. If instead what you say is, look, we clearly dropped the ball somewhere. You're not performing up to the standards. And I know it's not because you lack desire or capability. We obviously haven't set you up for success. So I want to have a conversation about what we need to do on our end to put you in a position to win. That person moves from the opposite side of the table to sitting right next to you. What I found is 9 times out of 10, by giving the benefit of the doubt like that, by admitting that the mistake is on us, the team member, we discover that, yes, we did in fact do something wrong and stupid. The team member's like, yeah, it's been really hard to do stuff when I'm also doing X, Y, and Z over here. You're doing X, Y, and Z also? I didn't know you were doing all that. Why are you doing that? Bob should be doing that.
Right.
What's going on? Let's figure this out. That never would have come out if we just got defensive. The other thing that it does is it gives me room and permission to come back after we've set them up for success to say, we had this conversation. We set you up for success. Stuff still isn't working out. What's going on? Because if we both agree that you got what you need, now maybe it's not on us that I do need you to do this. And if we can't get this fixed, then I'm sorry. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It just means you can't work here. And in going through it with that path, step one, it's my fault. How do we fix it? Step two, there's still a problem. Maybe it's your fault. And then if this continues to be an issue, then step three, we're going to put you on a performance improvement plan. And if it's not resolved then you're out. I found that people will opt out themselves because they know that they've been put in a position to win. There's no defensiveness and just has a way of working out. So yeah, when you screw something up, admit it's your fault. If things aren't going right, assume it's your fault. Probably is.
Well, and you break it down super clearly in your book where you say, okay, it comes down to three things: clear purpose, clear context, clear accountability.
Yeah.
I mean that, by the way, that's like parenting as well. That's like every area of your life. If you have clear purpose, clear context, and then there's clear accountability, it just works.
Yeah, this is the why. And one of our core values in all of our companies has always been seek the why. So if you don't understand why we're doing something as a team member, then it's we're going to do our best to communicate the why ahead of time. We're going to do our best to communicate the purpose behind it. We're sometimes going to fall short. So if you don't understand why we're doing something, we're never going to ask you to do something just because that's we said so. Okay, that's not the kind of culture we're living here. So if you don't understand the why, if you think it's stupid, then come and seek the why. Because you're also not allowed to just assume that we're idiots and don't know what we're doing and that you know better. Okay, so seek the why, seek the purpose. We also need to give them context. This is, and by context, I mean, this is how what we're doing fits into our broader value creation process, right? So I need to be able to zoom out and explain to people how the business works. And we do that through, you know, business process mapping and visualization and things like that. But then, yeah, there's got to be some accountability. Now that you've sought the why, you understand the process, it's on you. And this is how we're going to hold people accountable. We're going to do this through clear roles and accountability bullets. We're going to do this through scorecards where every metric has an owner next to it. And we're going to do it through, you know, sometimes uncomfortable but necessary conversations, because clarity is kindness.
Yeah, but I think you mentioned one thing there too. You're designing scorecards, right? You have scorecards, and you think about in so many areas of life. I think of my children or business owners or whoever it might be. There, if there's no scorecard, then how do people know if they're winning or losing, right? Like, people go out there, you think of a basketball court, they go on a basketball court and there's no hoops and people are just out there dribbling and it gets boring pretty quick, right? And so having a scorecard And like, this is how I know I am winning. And so think about this quote. I've always shared this quote, and I'd love to get your take on it, that the majority of people don't lack motivation. They lack direction.
Yeah, I agree. And again, if the goal, if motivation is what is required to for this thing to happen, then you have a structural problem with the business, because none of us are always motivated all the time.
Right.
And so truly, like, this is what's required. So the only way this thing works is if I'm hyper-motivated all the time. What if I have a bad day? You know, what if I get in an argument with my spouse? What if, I mean, I was leaving for work, about to get going. And, you know, my daughter, who's 17, she's going to hate that I'm telling this story, but I don't care. She just left. And then next thing you know, she comes running back into the house, screaming and crying, because she had just backed her car when she was backing out of the garage. She backed it just straight into this tree that was right next to our driveway. Ooh. Now, this tree wasn't recently planted. This tree didn't jump out and get her. This tree's kind of been there longer than the house has been there, and certainly as long as she's been alive. And yet, even though she's backed out of this parking spot probably 100 times, on this day, she decided to back her car into the tree, completely blowing out her back window.
Oh.
Glasses everywhere. You know, she's freaking out. I got to be honest. That day, I was less motivated. So is this what's required? I think that's completely crazy. Like, what we need to have, we need to be professionals. And what it means to be a professional is, this is the work that I'm doing today. These are the numbers that I'm trying to, you know, optimize for. And this is the time that we need to get it done by. And it's just as simple as that. Your feelings and your motivation at some point have to be irrelevant. And I've said this to clients before, because they're like, I'll be talking to them, they're like, yeah, just struggling with this and this and this, and I know I need to do the same, but I got, and they're going on and on and on. I'll let them go for a while, and I'll be like, okay, are you going to do it anyway? Yeah, I guess I have to. Okay. Then I don't care how you're feeling.
Mm.
I mean, I do for you as a person. It's just not relevant to the planning and execution process. Or if it is, decide you're not going to be able to do it, opt out and put somebody else in. Okay. You're a player, you're injured. So somebody else has to step in. But you just feeling this way, your motivation, your inspiration, that's adorable. This ain't kindergarten. Okay. Can you do the job or not?
I love that. I had Justin Sua, who's a coach to NBA players and NFL coaches. And that he said in the podcast, he said, Chad, the people I work with, they don't have a motivation issue, right? You don't become an NFL head coach and be like, man, I feel like I need to be motivated. And he said, what I help them build is the process and system to go execute and be successful. Like, I don't have to call this NFL head coach and be like, hey, you really need to get up today, right? Yeah, it's right. Like, yeah. He's like, I'm more of like, hey, you probably need to go to bed at some point. You know, but you're building the process and system to go make it happen. And I think that, Ryan, that is so powerful. It's something that I just think so few people get. So when you bring people into your program, when you bring people into Scalable, that's got to be one of those things that just goes from black and white to color in their lives, where they're just like, whoa, I never thought about it that way. Because we spend so much time thinking about motivation.
We do. And look, we want to know. So we're always going to start from like, where do you want to be in 3 years? I love 3-year targets. I frankly don't get into these like long 10-year, you know, big, hairy, audacious goals. I'm just like, man, this is too freaking far. Right. It don't work for me. Like, I get it. If you're a big company, like, fine, go and do it. I like to have a very specific 3-year target: revenue, profitability. What kind of enterprise value are we looking at? Now, we're going to have a company purpose. The company purpose has no real end point. It's just, this is something that's going to get me excited about all day, every day. This is a problem that I'm excited to solve for the rest of my life if need be. But we've got the 3-year target. We break that up into 12 90-day chunks for how we're going to execute and get there. But one of the questions I'm always going to ask is, okay, what's your why behind this? And we look at this in three areas. What do you want for yourself? So what's your me? What is your selfish goal? Because everybody we ask the why, it's like world peace. You know, and it's like, oh my God, that's adorable. You're not running. This is not the Miss America pageant. Okay. What do you selfishly want for you? Then we're going to say, what do you want for us? So what do you want for the people in your inner circle, the usins, usually like, you know, family, maybe very close, you know, business partners, and then the them, the outside world, you know, your community, your industry. And so we make them do it in terms of me, us, and them. Because what we know is that there are times when it's going to get hard. And so you do need to reference a why. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't have a why. And I'm not saying that your motivation doesn't matter. But at some point, even that why that's somewhere out there in the future just isn't going to be enough. And so the question is, are you going to do the work anyway? It really is that simple. Because nothing that you write down on a piece of paper, you can walk around with your goals and you can create a vision board and all this other stuff. Most of the people I know who spend a lot of time on those kinds of things, frankly, they're the people who get the least amount of stuff done because they would rather play business and create vision boards than just get to freaking work. Mm-hmm. So I'm ultimately going to distill it down to, what are we going to get done in the next 90 days that's going to get us closer to this goal? What are now, in light of what needs to happen in the next 90 days, what are your big three for this week? And in light of your big three for this week, what are you going to get done today? You're going to commit to getting done. Really is that simple. I'm not saying it's easy,
no,
but it is that simple.
Well, and everything that you just said comes down to creating it in a very consumable way. When you say, what are your big three things you have to get done this week? People are like, okay, I can do that. You say, yeah. Okay, what are the 28 things that you can do? Then the confused mind does nothing and they shut down.
Yeah. And we distill it down even more. I mean, I'm a big believer that your number one goal as a CEO, people say, oh, the goal of a CEO, like the job of a CEO is to set the vision. The job of a CEO is to hire and retain the best talent. The job of a CEO is don't run out of money. Those are all fine. I don't think that any of those three are, though, the number one job of a CEO. I think the number one job of a CEO is to identify their company's right next thing. Mm. What is the most important thing that we need to be working on right now, today, and then to surge our all available resources, because you as the CEO have the ability to do this, to surge all available resources to the successful resolution and completion of that right next thing. And then you simply repeat the process. Everything else either informs what your right next thing should be or is downstream from it. So what's our vision? We're going to set the vision. Fine. That helps to inform your right next thing. Hire, train, and retain the best. Cool. That's surging resources to the right next thing. Don't run out of money. That's also capital allocation, resource allocation. But if you're going to say, like, what do I do all day, every day as the CEO of this company? And you can't tell me, if I ask you the question, hey, what is the number one constraint in your business and therefore your right next thing? If you don't have a crystal clear answer to that question, then I submit to you, you're likely failing as a CEO or you very soon will.
Wow.
It really is that simple. I don't know what else you could be doing. Just visionating all over the place? Is that what we're doing right now? No, this is not a thing.
Oh, that is powerful. Ryan, that is powerful. And that just, as you're saying that, I mean, whether you're the CEO or you're a founder, leader, whatever it is, that right next thing, that is critical to the success, to being able to go and execute. Because people don't know what the right next thing is. And that's the answer. If you don't know what the right next thing is, then that's why you're not executing.
It's what we spend the bulk of the time with our clients and portfolio companies working on. One of the biggest challenges of execution, it goes back to kind of where we started, they don't know what they should be doing. And so it is a planning issue, but it's not a planning issue in the way that they think it is.
Right.
It's a planning issue in that they don't actually know what the right next thing is. They're working on something that is actually thing 3, 4, 5, or 6. Or 18, 19, 20. They're too far in the future. And so sequence is really, really, really important. And so when we talk about, like, what's your big three, we don't speak about those in terms of importance. We think about those in terms of sequence, because something else can be more important, but if it has a dependency, again, that's not the right next thing. And so just what's the right next thing that you need to do? And more times than not, man, it's wild. People actually know what the right next thing is. They just don't want to do it because they know it's going to be hard or it's going to be painful or it's going to result in a difficult conversation they don't want to have, work they don't want to do. And so they're delaying doing their right next thing because they want to work on a future thing that's kind of more fun, more interesting, lower stakes.
Right, right. Like, so when you're building a home, Ryan, no one gets excited about building the or laying the foundation, right? No one gets excited about that. They want to immediately talk about the light fixtures or whatever, but the right next thing would be make sure you have a solid foundation.
Yeah, and the CEOs that want to call themselves visionaries all the time, they're the ones that keep talking about the freaking light fixture because they don't want to address the fact that the foundation's cracked. But they're going to be like, but that's not my job. I'm visionary. Like, shut up, dude. Your job is to figure out what the right next thing is and to surge resources to it. Okay. Just talking about stuff, making, you know, cool speeches, you know, creating vision boards and like, look, all of our values are on the wall now. Yeah. That guess how much your customer cares about that? Not at all. Okay. Not at all. Guess how much your banker cares about that? Even less. Okay. So all that matters is what is the right next thing and what do we need to do to unblock that bottleneck?
I love that.
Repeat.
I love that. Ryan Dice, that's why I started this by saying the great Ryan Dice. The things you shared are powerful and if implemented will absolutely change your life. Ryan, scalable.co is where every business owner, business leader, and founder should go to get the guidance that you're talking about right now.
Yeah, I would actually say let's get them over to my YouTube channel because that's where I'm just giving all the stuff away for free.
Oh, okay. Wait, so, is it same scalable.co YouTube channel?
Nah, Ryan Dice official because I'm such a goober that I set up Ryan Dice back in the like Google what was it called? Google tried to do social back then. And it's such an old thing that I can't transfer over to it. So yeah, Ryan Dice official. But yeah, I mean, if they want to go to scalable.co and check out what we're doing business-wise, I'd love them to do that. But I would just say, go to my YouTube channel. If you like kind of the stuff I'm talking about there and giving away for free, then, you know, maybe show up and give us some money in the future. But for right now, I got lots of free stuff out there for you.
I love that. Ryan Dice, D-E-I-S-S. Official. Ryan, great being with you. Always love the time we spend together. Take care.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye now.